change are fueling the storm's development and intensity. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 83 degrees and partly cloudy. In New York City, 74 degrees with fair skies. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Spangert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.
Africa Now. Today's show features Nigeria, economic challenges, protests, and more. Africa Now is next. Welcome to the show. I'm Muizu Muntali. The music in the background is Shakara by Sergio Mendes and Brazil 77. And we play that remembering Sergio Mendes, who joined the ancestors on September 5th. This August, people in Nigeria went to the streets to protest President Bola Tinubu's government economic policies, which has raised the cost of living. Many protesters have been killed and arrested by the police. At the center of these demonstrations is the economic hardships people are facing. But they go beyond that issue. People are also demanding that the government serve the masses. Hence, the protests were dubbed hashtag end bad governance in Nigeria. Just as protest movements in Kenya, Tanzania, and other places in June and July this year, Nigerian youth have played a prominent role. Recently, at a conversation which contextualized the general economic problems in Nigeria, government policies such as the current petroleum price changes and negative role of multinational oil companies, the protests, youth unemployment, and more. The conversation featured Eustace James, Assistant General Secretary, Research of Nigeria Labor Congress in Abuja. Here is the conversation. Eustace James, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, now we wanted to discuss a number of issues as pertains to the recent protests which took place in August in Nigeria. I wanted you to give us a background of those protests and what the reasons behind them. Yeah, and then we can start from there.
Well, just to see that I may not have detailed actors' background, but I may have my own independent opinion on what happened. Because my organization is not involved in the organization and implementation of the protest. My name is Comrade Eustace Imoyera James. I am from the Nigeria Labour Congress headquarters in Abuja. But reports, interactions, and unfolding events clearly show that the protest was people-driven. It was a resolve of the people, especially the youth, to protest against what I may regard as anti-people government policies that has brought untold hardship on the Nigeria and Nigerians. The twin policy pronouncement on the very day of inauguration of this present government have been very contentious and critical. These policies are the removal of subsidy on petrol fuel and the floating of the naira to foreign currency. This has led to automatic spiral increase in prices of goods and services with unimaginable inflationary rate that has led to serious hardship and Nigeria's living in penury. So the protest was a direct response to this policy pronouncement and the implementation of certain government policies that are people.
Yeah, and as you said, this is mostly people driven, and they, and also some of the one thing that I was seeing in the reports that this was not necessarily because of the response to other demonstrations that were taking place around the same time in Kenya and Tanzania and other places, based on similar issues, economic issues, unemployment, as you mentioned, the youth. There were other demonstrations earlier this year. If we can also talk to us about that, because how come these ones have gained more attention compared to the ones that took place a little earlier, and yet the issues that we're dealing with are almost similar, right?
Yeah, we can't run away from the fact that what happened in Kenya was a prelude to what happened in Nigeria. We are in the same region, and people interchange ideas and notes. People compare situations. So the policy, the reaction to the Kenya government policy may have spoiled the Nigerians' reaction to the government policy too. So they can be aesthetically different, because it's all the policies that are putting pressure on the masses in terms of increasing hardship on the downtrodden people. And people reacting will be a follow-up to what happened in Kenya. We cannot distinct the two. But the reality is that people are reacting because there is mass hunger in the land. People are suffering. These government policies have inflicted so much pains on the people that is becoming unbearable. And the only option left to the people is to go on the street in protest of these policies.
And also the policies, even though you said that the Nigeria Labour Congress was not necessarily involved in the protests, but you've spoken out on the issues of the cost of living as well, right?
Yes. Like I said, we are not entirely in ideas different from what the protesters are saying. We are not against the reasons. But the difference is that as organized labor, our actions and reactions are organized. We debate them. We are known faces. We are not unknown faces. When we want to organize action, we organize actions in line with the trade union rules and practices. We are not condemning the reasons or against the reasons, but we may not be comfortable with the strategies and the way the protests went. The NLC is purely against this after people's policies, and we have consistently engaged the government on these policies in an organized manner as an organized group.
And it's interesting. Earlier on, you said that these demonstrations are people led and faceless and leaderless. Do you see that also as a strength, somewhat in a way, or is it a weakness in terms of the protests? Because sometimes a lot of the younger people have said that people who, when they become the leaders, they're co-opted. Do you see also this as a way to avoid that that problem where leaders of these movements and demonstrations would be co-opted by the system?
Look, I'm not emphatically saying that they are faceless, but my point is that first, the NLC was not part of it. And again, those behind it cannot be identified as organized group. There may be known individuals who spearheaded the action, but the Nigeria Labour Congress is an organized trade union movement, organized labor movement, that debates its policies along its organs and take decisions for the best interest of the masses of Nigeria and Nigeria. So our strategy are quite different from those deployed during the hashtag #EndBadGovernance protest. But like I said, the issues are very synonymous. The issue are asymmetric to that the trade unions are advocating for.
Again, that's Eustace James. He's speaking to us from Abuja, Nigeria. He's the Assistant General Secretary Research of the Nigeria Labour Congress. We're looking at the situation in Nigeria, contextualizing the recent protests, which are looking at the economic challenges the country is facing and other issues. I wanted to find out the main points of the Nigeria Labour Congress and about dealing with the economic challenges that the country is facing. What were their particular demands to the government presently?
Yeah, the trade union demands are quite clear and have been communicated to the government severally in documented and electronic form. First, that policy approach to economic development must be all encompassing, must be consultative enough, and must be people driven. There must be policies that have social content. First, with regards to the withdrawal of subsidy from petroleum products, the Nigerian Labour Congress over the years have argued that what is regarded as subsidy today is inefficiency and subsidizing corruption. That if Nigeria as a crude oil producing nation ensure that its four refineries work to the maximum capacity, that the argument about subsidy may not be existing. Because what is built into the price template today are issues around flights, demurrage, insurance, offshore auction loading costs that will ordinarily not occur if petroleum product is refined within Nigeria. Therefore, before thinking of withdrawal of subsidy that is claimed to exist, ensure that these refineries are in good shape and are operational, so that the masses will have alternative of buying from product from locally refined refineries, which may not be as exorbitant as those that are imported. And by then, the current price driven deregulation we are talking, or subsidy withdrawal we are talking about today, may not necessarily have harsh impact on the people. And that when these refineries are working, Nigerians will also have jobs to do. And when they have jobs to do, they will earn money to be able to cope with the reality of the regime. But that has not been done. And again, the Nigerian Labour Congress has also presented that as it is today, Nigeria economy, especially the transport sector, is mono-driven. It's mono-driven in the sense that it's purely driven by petroleum products because there are no effective functional railway system. There are no effective public transport system. There are no effective alternatives to this petroleum product. That the idea of introducing what they call compressed natural gas vehicles, CNG, that policy should be effectively implemented and that people cannot have alternative between petroleum product and the use of gas. And then when you say you withdraw subsidy, the impact will not be too much on the people. And that there should be social contents, social elements to cushion the effect of the downtrodden. And that there should be decent living wages for Nigeria workers. As of today, the government has signed into law 70,000 naira minimum wage, but it has not been implemented. That is supposed to be effective from 1st of May 2024. And when you look at 70,000 naira minimum wage, to the cost of living today in Nigeria is almost equivalent to nothing. All these are clear demands from the labor movement. Ensure that we have functioning health system, we have functioning educational system, and that local industry should also be supported so that they don't depend on foreign currency to import products that we cannot determine the price, that the prices are being determined by international market. That if local industries are effective and producing, beyond creating employment for Nigeria, it will save Nigeria foreign currency, foreign reserve, without necessarily looking for foreign currency to go into importation of petroleum product, to go into importation of other products. All these are conditionality. And that to be able to drive effective industrialization that will promote local production, the electricity system must be made effective. The power sector must work. But all of these have not been putting in place, but the policies have been on for over a year. These are the challenges.
And as you articulated in this, what you just mentioned, one of the issues was the refining of oil in Nigeria. There was a new development. I think Dangote was going to be opening a refinery recently. Is that online yet?
Well, from reports, we are told that Dangote refinery started production 1st of August and that its products will be released into the market from 1st of September and that its product will be released into the market from 15th of September. But there are a lot of conspiracy theories and state contradicting positions. One thing that the NNPC will be the sole purchaser of refined product from Dangote refinery, which means that the NNPC will still have a strong monopoly over petroleum product in Nigeria and will still be the sole determinant of petroleum product prices in Nigeria. Another is that the NNPCL, which is the government public oil corporation, says it will only purchase Dangote petroleum products if the prices are cheaper than that of international prices. Then the question is, why are we always in comparison with international prices? Why the comparison? If the government approved policy is that crude should be given to Dangote refinery at local, using local prices, using local resources at Naira, I would then wonder why anybody would then begin to discuss the issues of prices of Dangote products with that of international prices if it's purchasing crude with local currency. But we are yet to see the product, and the theory that, or the assumption that if the products are in the market, it may crash prices, is yet to be ascertained.
That's an interesting issue. I mean, it also brings back to the issue raised earlier about conditionalities in the international trading system. In this whole scenario, yes, we have the bad governance by the government, which people are demonstrating, and the bad governance in Nigeria. But also, how do you see the multinational corporations who have been exporting oil from Nigeria for many years, many decades? How do you see their role in all this as well? Because you don't hear about their actions in this present situation or the challenges in Nigeria.
That is really the dilemma we find ourselves. The dilemma is that the major causes of these challenges are the multinationals. They are the world powers, the WTO rules that are responsible for these state policies. But when the chips are down, they are oblivious. You don't find them. Rather, Nigerians are interested in whom they voted for. Nigerians are interested who is their leader. So, because the belief is that the leader should be able to discipline capital. The leader should be able to ensure that all players in the Nigeria economy plays according to the rules and to the benefit of the citizens. So the citizens may not know this multinational. But like I said, even judging from the stories, revelations from Dangote and others before the eventual decision that crude should be sold to local refineries at local currency, clearly show that the multinational oil companies were sabotaging or are still sabotaging the efforts of Nigerians or local investors who have been able to build refineries in Nigeria. There are clear revelations that these multinationals are interested in taking the crude oil offshore, refine there, and then bring back to Nigeria, which would then mean double cost for Nigerians to pay. So these are the realities. But like I said, the masses, especially the downtrodden, may not understand the complexity around this international politics and the role of these multinational companies.
Yeah, and I guess that's one of the issues that probably has to be hashed out further, because yes, there is the role of the governing structure in the internal governing structure, but there's also the hidden hand behind the scenes that put these people in power or controlled these people in many ways. And so is there discussion about that within the various movements more extensive discussion, rather, not so much is there discussion, but is there more extensive discussion so that people have a wider understanding of the dynamics of the power players, the local power players, and also the external power players? Do you see that also being brought out in this current movement, and also by your organization as well, the Nigeria Labor Congress?
Yeah, there are debates around this. But you see, the challenge we also have is that Nigeria is a country with high level of illiteracy, and it is difficult and very complex for all to follow. Like I said, the elites, not even all the elite, the very few enlightened ones understand this complexity. But what is obvious that everyone can understand is that we have a president, we have ministers whom we elected to give us good governance. So these people, they are not interested in the hidden hands, as you just noted now. But for us in the trade unions, we've always, in our analysis, we always draw all of this. But the point is that the states has the coercive power and responsibility to ensure that the right is done to favor its citizens and the nation.
And I guess also what annoys a lot of people, I mean, in the middle of all this, you had the state buying a plane, is it? And doing a number of things, which people saw that this is a private jet, I guess, for the executive. But and also doing other things which people saw, okay, wait a minute, if there's funding for this, how come there's no funding for the school fees and other issues which people are struggling for day to day? That was also part of the huge uproar as well, right, in this past year. Looking at the current government, which has only been there a year and a few months, same party, but it's a different person now. Do you see that was also part of the anxiety and also the displeasure of the people?
Yeah, that is the contradictions we are talking about. If the state explanation that the policy is about sacrifice for the rainy day, then the state, the actions of the office bearer and state actors is not reflecting that. It is only natural that the people will react the way they are reacting now. If it was common knowledge and clear that yes, office bearer and state actors are also making the sacrifices, issues around cost of governance, then people can say, oh, it's going with time, there will be improvement. But that seems not to be the case. Those in governance are living above opulence. They are living luxury, ostentatious life. Then telling the common man, especially the working people, to make sacrifices is a contradiction. These are the contradictions we find ourselves. But another emerging scenario now is that voices of dissent are now taken to be affront, and states is viciously out for those who are displaying dissent. So this is where we find ourselves.
Yeah, and speaking about that, speaking about voices of dissent, that hits home particularly for your organization. Just today, as we're speaking today on September 9th, there's been the arrest of the Nigeria Labor Congress President, Ajaero. And if you could talk to us about the reasons for that arrest and how that is similar to what you've been saying about voices of dissent being.
Well, I cannot clearly say this is the reason, because I have not had access to our president. Only it was even on social media and news that I got to know that he was arrested. The last I know is that he was scheduled for an international assignment in the UK. A sister trade union, the Trade Union Congress of UK, is having an activity that the leadership of the NLC was invited to participate in, and he was on his way out when he was arrested. But the from reading from the some of the media reports is that there was an earlier invitation to him by the police to appear on the 4th on the 5th, which was Thursday last week, and that he did not appear. But we are also reliably aware that our counsel actually wrote to the police to say that they will be convenient for the leadership of the NSC to appear before, and that it will give a new date. Also coupled with this is an engagement in the UK. So what is happening now is clearly a case of persecution. It's very clear to the entire world, very clear.
Listen to a conversation which contextualizes the general economic problems in Nigeria, government policies such as the current petroleum price changes and negative role of multinational corporations, the protests, youth unemployment, and more. The conversation features Eustace James, Assistant General Secretary in Research of the Nigeria Labor Congress in Abuja. The music in the background is Suffering by NECA. You're listening to Africa Now on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., your jazz and justice station. Now back to the conversation. Do you suspect one reason why, even though you might not have the exact information of why the arrest took place, but do you suspect the reason is because he had spoken about the cost of living situation, how it's affecting Nigerians, and speaking out against some of the policies, the economic policies which the government has instituted, which are having has a disastrous effect on the people?
Well, from our point of view, it's simply because of our stand against the anti-government policies, and also our clear support for the human rights of protesters who have been arrested, those who were brutalized, and those who were humiliated during the last protest. This is from our own point of view. But like I said, this is not the first time he's invited. About 2 weeks ago, he was invited precisely 29th of August. He was invited by the police for questioning, which he did appear over an allegation that the NLC was hamboring someone who was out to overthrow Nigeria government by sponsoring the last protest. And he has appeared before the police on that. I think a day after, another invitation came from another department of the same police force, inviting him for a case that is being investigated that causing disruptive public peace and destruction of public property, which are all issues around the last protest. Because the whole issues around the land protest, he's not the only person that is being persecuted now. There are a number of hundreds of Nigerians who have been arrested for their role or for their participation in the last hashtag Head Bad Governance protest. So it is obvious that is connected to that. It is very obvious that is connected to that.
And speaking of all the people being arrested and the as in connection to the End Bad Governance in Nigeria, has this intimidated the protest movement, or people are still coming out in the streets as they were a month ago?
No, but you see, even that street protest was not just sporadic, because there was enough notice given to government and conditions were also stated before that protest action started. And we can't rule out the fact that there might be uprising again, except government is actually out to do the needful to ensure that living is comfortable. Nigerians are comfortable in terms of living, because no matter how you suppress the truth will definitely stand. People are hungry, and there's a limit to which people can bear hunger. So even if the entire Nigerians are arrested, there's every likelihood that they can even start from the prison, because if they are arrested and they are still hungry even in the prison, you can't hold them back. Prisoners have rioted. Prisoners have broken jail as a result of a response to even not only in Nigeria, even in other places. So the strategy of if I arrest, it will put an end to it, might only be temporal, might only be for a while, but it can't be forever. Like I said, I'm not aware of anybody on the street at the moment protesting, but you cannot suppress the will of the people for too long.
I mean, there's going back to the protests and the will of the people, this is one of the latest of major demonstration actions. Of course, people remember the End Scars demonstrations, which took place in 2020, which was really focusing on police brutality. And then in 2012, there was also Occupy Nigeria. What's the difference between those protests and today? And one kind of thread with all of them, they're all youth-led protests. But what's the major difference today with the end bad governance in Nigeria compared to the other ones?
The difference are enormous. First, the times are different, and again, the poverty level today compared to 2012 is unimaginable. More and more people have fallen into poverty since 2012 to date, since even 2020 to date. So the clear reality is that almost every Nigerian is angry with the situation. Almost every Nigerian, even if I don't say is angry, is unhappy with the situation. So this the times now is self-mobilizing. The effort Nigeria Labour Congress puts in 2012 to mobilize Nigerians against withdrawal of subsidy by the Jonathan regime, we will not put in one tenth of that effort today to get people mobilized, because people are already self-mobilized by the current state of hunger and inflation, by the current level of poverty. I can tell you that over 10 million Nigerians may feel, what is it worth living for? So the times are clearly different. And I think this should be a clear message to the state that the people are not happy.
And also, one of the things, one of the issues, of course, is insecurity. Is that also one of the issues that's in, which has been raised in the end bad governance in Nigeria, because people feel that the government is, one, the cost of living is very high, two, and also there is this insecurity, particularly in the northeast area of the country.
They are very well interrelated. When there is good governance, insecurity will reduce to a barest minimum, because the major cause of insecurity today over time has been this bad governance. There is huge unemployment, especially youth unemployment. So the youths, not only in the Northeast, in almost all parts of Nigeria, are ready army for violence and crisis. Kidnapping has increased. Internet fraud has increased. Almost every negative and social vices has increased. Why? Because people are not employed. Because the system is not working. Because there are no social protection system in place. So it is very clear, if today you can engage these youths that engage in these vices, the number of people who engage in these vices will reduce. Then the army or the military will then be able to contain the few number of persons who will be left. Because for some now, it's a business. It's a means of survival. And this is what I think that the state should look into. People can't go to farm today, because if you go to farm, you will be kidnapped. And when you are kidnapped, your kidnappers are not interested in anything that ransom. They collect money, they release you. So what are we talking about? But if these people have other things doing that they earn that money from, they might not revert to these dangerous tendencies, which is also endangering their life. So the state must realize that it must put policies in place that are pro-people, that are pro-poor, that can address the current issue. Sometimes I hear people in the security field talking about kinetic and the non-kinetic approach. The non-kinetic approach are issues around civic engagement, are issues around good governance. But how much resources and effort is being put into that? Rather, they put effort more into the kinetic approach of buying arms and ammunition. And yet, the security is increasing. By 2012 or 2020, insecurity was restricted to a certain region where we talk of Northeast. But today, it is in all the regions. Yes, some are predominant, but there's no region today in Nigeria that is not experiencing insecurity and crisis.
Also, wanted to, before we go, I wanted you to also talk to us about what do you see next in the current situation? As you see it, especially as you look at looking at it from the labor perspective, the trade union perspective, the workers' perspective, as you just talked about the lack of employment. And early on, you talked about, when we started the conversation, you were talking about how, in a way, the energy sector has not been diversified. I think it's one of the things you're emphasizing. What what do you see next in this situation, and also what are you, would you be proposing, particularly from the labor union side?
But for us, we the Nigeria Labour Congress has always been a nationalistic and a patriotic organization. We see a future for Nigeria. We hope, and not just hope, we will continue to engage state actors, office bearer, and all relevant stakeholders for a better change, irrespective of all persecution or prosecution, we will not relent. I will continue to canvass our alternative policy agenda with the hope that the state or the government will see the need to adopt them. The Nigeria Labour Congress believes in social dialogue. We believe in engagement, and that continue to pursue in our approach to engaging government. We are not losing hope. Like I said not too long ago, this is not the first time that the leadership of the NLC is being arrested. Myself talking here in 2003, I spent 7 nights in a prison, in a Kujim medium prison in Abuja, over protest against increasing fuel price during the Obasanjo regime. So it is not strange to us, and we can't be deterred because we are resolved to fight and protect our members and Nigerians. So we will continue to engage the government. We do hope that the government too mean well for Nigeria and can begin to change its policy or fine-tune its policy to better Nigerians.
And finally, how would you like to see people in the U.S. Since this show is in the U.S., and how would you like to see people be in solidarity with Nigerians today and beyond?
Well, is everybody have a stake in this, because Nigeria is very strategic to the world, especially within the African continent and within the black man race. So those in the US must also continue to engage in debates, advocacy, and discussions on how governments in Nigeria can be pro-poor and how government policy can benefit the people and drive Nigeria to progress. There's nothing beyond that than to expect that those in the U.S., especially those who have influence over our government and our leadership, should ensure that our government and leadership do the right thing to benefit the people.
Eustace James, thank you very much for being on the show again with us. And we'll be in touch to get further perspective nuances on the issue.
Thank you very much, Moisa. I appreciate it.
We'll be right back.
just been listening to a conversation which contextualized the general economic problems in Nigeria, government policies such as the current petroleum price changes, and negative role of multinational oil companies, the protest against government economic policies which has raised the cost of living, youth unemployment, and more. The conversation featured Eustace James. He is Assistant General Secretary in Research at the Nigeria Labor Congress in Abuja. To revisit the conversation, you can go to Africa Now's SoundCloud page. That's Africa Now online on SoundCloud. The music in the background is Wolf Eats Wolf by Tony Allen. That's it for Africa Now for today. I'm your host, Muizam Tali. Up next is Headline News, followed by Shah Nana, who's in Alamein, which looks at issues in Northern Africa and the Middle East, with a special focus on the plight of Palestinians. And that's followed by the Women's Collective Clothing Parlor, which is followed by Human Rights and Justice with Akichi Taifa. Check out Africa Now on Facebook and on Twitter. That's at Africa Now Online. Also, Africa Now is archived on iTunes Podcast and on SoundCloud. Search under Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. That's Africa Now Online on SoundCloud. Thanks to Africa Now's executive producer and co-host James Pope. And thanks to our engineers, Michael Nasella and Kalia Chapman. And thanks to our research fellow volunteers, Chanda Kozer and Funangonda. And also our Africa World Now Project Collective of Dr. Tasmin Siddiqui, Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, Dr. Josh Myers, and Kurt Urson. And thanks to the entire team here at WPFW and to you for joining us. Continue to support all the great programs on WPFW. We're going to leave you the closing song entitled Moving by Omah Lay. Thank you. Have a great week. Have a great day. And stay safe.
WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York. I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns with some brief news headlines. Presidential nominees Kamala Harris and Donald Trump squared off last night in their first face-to-face debate of the campaign, accusing each other of lying about policy records and threatening the future of the country. Harris set a strong tone from the beginning, a stark contrast from the June debate performance of her predecessor and boss, Joe Biden. Over 51 million people tuned in for last night's debate, about the same viewership for the Biden-Trump debate. The candidates sparred over policy, with Harris accusing Trump of imposing a tax on Americans through his import tariffs, while Trump accused Harris of helping cause the recent spurt of inflation. Harris also lambasted Trump's record on reproductive rights.
And now in over 20 states, there are Trump abortion bans, which make it criminal for a doctor or nurse to provide health care. In one state, it provides prison for life. Trump abortion bans that make no exception even for rape and incest, which understand what that means. A survivor of a crime, a violation to their body, does not have the right to make a decision about what happens to their body next. That is immoral.
Trump defended his choosing of Supreme Court justices who eventually overturned Roe v. Wade, while also falsely claiming some state laws allow killing babies, a claim rebutted by debate co-host Lindsay Davis.
For 52 years, every legal scholar, every Democrat, every Republican, liberal, conservative, they all wanted this issue to be brought back to the states where the people could vote. And that's what happened. Now, Ohio, the vote was somewhat liberal. Kansas, the vote was somewhat liberal, much more liberal than people would have thought. But each individual state is voting. It's the vote of the people now. It's not tied up in the federal government. I did a great service in doing it. It took courage to do it. And the Supreme Court had great courage in doing it. And I give tremendous credit to those six justices.
There is no state in this country where it is legal to kill a baby after it's born.
The debate also touched on issues of immigration, race, and election integrity. Following the debate, highly influential pop star Taylor Swift took to social media to endorse Harris, calling her a, quote, gifted leader. The Harris campaign is calling for a second debate with Trump, while Trump claimed the debate was rigged and said he would be, quote, less inclined to debate Harris a second time. The first general election ballots are being mailed out today to absentee voters in Alabama. New Labor Department data published today shows consumer price inflation in August fell to its lowest level in 3 years, reinforcing expectations that Federal Reserve governors will cut their benchmark interest rate at a policy meeting next week. Consumer prices in August rose only 2.5% from the year prior, down from the 2.9% annualized inflation in July. It is the fifth straight decline in the CPI inflation rate, and the lowest inflation reading since February 2021. The so-called core price inflation, which excludes cost-volatile goods such as food and energy, was 3.2% in August, unchanged from July. A key contributor to the drop in overall inflation in August was a decline in gas prices, which are down over 10% from a year ago. Used car prices are also down over 10% from a year ago. Fed policymakers are increasingly likely now to shift their primary focus away from fighting inflation towards supporting a cooling labor market. And Hurricane Francine is closing in today on the Louisiana coast as a Category 1 storm with 90-mile-per-hour winds. The storm is forecast to rapidly intensify and reach Category 2 strength before landfall later today. Life-threatening storm surge along the coast could reach 10 feet in the hardest-hit areas, which could see considerable flash and urban flooding. Damaging winds could approach 100 miles per hour. After landfall, Francine is forecast to move northward across Mississippi tomorrow. Record warm waters in the Gulf of Mexico, a hallmark of climate change, are fueling the storm's development and intensity.